because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin-I summary of this week in the Capitol and politics. We're going to start with transportation funding again.
Yes.
It's the do you and I agree it's the single biggest puzzle in the next state budget?
After they got to figure out, you know, how much they can put into schools, but this is the biggest problem area, I would say, for them to figure out.
Yeah, I agree. Which is why we're leading with it. Speaker Voss threw down two important markers last week in an interview with his hometown paper, the Journal Times. First of all, understand that when Governor Walker says we're going to minimize mega projects in southeast Wisconsin, that threatens, the speaker believes, and I believe, the funding for reworking I-94 in Racine County, his native Racine County. So he said, quoting Speaker Voss, "I am frustrated that the project under Governor Walker's plan is going to be pushed back even further, making the interstate more dangerous and more expensive." Well, I looked it up on the WisDOT, and right now the intersection of Mile High Road and I-94 in Racine County, average daily vehicles 88,000, projected to go to 121,000, an increase of 37%, which is why Voss said this. But before I give you a chance, JR, Voss also said our budget, at least the assembly budget, is going to, quote, "We are not going to again kick the can down the road. We are going to come up with some long-term solutions instead of just saying we'll fix the problem by borrowing more money from our kids," a reference to the $850 million being borrowed in the current two-year budget. Okay, I've dominated this. How important are these two markers that Voss laid down last week?
Well, you got to separate them out a little bit. One, look at what's happening in southeast Wisconsin in general. Governor Walker's letter from a couple weeks ago said minimize southeast Wisconsin mega projects. Well, my coworker looked at, like, what's going on. Outside of the zoo, the answer is not much. You know, I-94, my mom lives in Kenosha County. I've driven that section where I have 50 intersects 94. That piece is out to eight lanes. It narrows back in Racine County. There's nothing really going on right now.
Is there
now
an Autobahn on all eight lanes? Because that's just at times a very frightening.
Unless you're like me and like that stuff. So there's not much happening there. 94 east-west, they backed away from the double-decker idea, but there's not much happening construction-wise there.
Yeah.
I-43 is the next thing I think in the pipeline. Again, not much happening. The zoo is different. The zoo, remember that in this budget, the talk from Scott Fitzgerald was, if we don't borrow the rest of this money, we're risking having bridges to nowhere, like literally hanging in the sky and walking away from. We have to finish off the zoo. So I'm not actually sure how much of the zoo is left to be done after this biennium. But there's a difference in that you can kind of just push things off some more. It's not like you have shovels in the ground right now in those projects. So there's that piece of it. The other piece of it is, all right, so Robin Voss is saying we're going to have a budget that says this.
We're going to fund it long term.
Where are Senate Republicans saying the same thing? So you have this kind of weird dynamic where Voss, Majority Leader Jim Steinke, Joint Finance Co-Chair John Eric, are all saying, we're going to fix it. We're going to find a way to finance this. We're open to a revenue enhancer.
Yes.
Scott Fitzgerald is not calling for the same thing. Neither are his members. You do not hear Senate Republicans banging the drum for a gas tax increase. There also is this perception that maybe even if Voss and Steinke and Niagara are willing to go there, will his caucus go along with them? I mean, remember, there are a lot of conservative guys from southeastern Wisconsin who ran on a no-tax increase pledge. They're not going to raise taxes. How do you get that budget through that caucus? That could be an issue to deal with. So there's that piece of it. Then back to the governor, who was laid on this marker's letter, saying, okay, you guys want to do a gas tax hike? You go make the argument. I'm going to show you, my administration will, come mid-September, this is how to look. And guess what? We can make this all work with what we've got.
Well, okay, but I still think that Voss is indicating to me, am I overreading this, that whatever budget comes out of the joint finance, his house might say, okay, on transportation funding, we're going to come up with a different method. We're going to pass a budget. We're going to rewrite the budget on transportation, send it back to the Senate. Senate, if you want to continue borrowing, if you want to delay projects statewide, that's on you, Governor. That's on you. I'm pretty surprised by the tenor of Voss saying, my major disagreement with the governor on transportation funding. He keeps ramping it up, throwing down this gauntlet.
Well, you talk to some Republicans, and this has been going on for almost a year now, where they say Governor Walker's taking, in their minds, a short-term approach, that they're not sure how long he's going to be around. They're not sure he's going to run for a third term. This is also was happening, by the way, last budget while he's running for president, or getting there, that they felt like we're going to be here longer than he is, and we're going to be stuck with this problem, and he's not going to fix it. Now they're at a point where, again, there's not a long-term solution. Now, you could find other ways. You could go to a mileage-driven tax. You can go with something, a different model, if you will. But as long as we're sticking with the revenue restraints that Governor Walker has, or a tax cut somewhere else, and where's the money be for that, yeah, we're kind of stuck in this standoff. So how do you resolve it? Who's going to blink? I don't know who will blink, and I'm still waiting to see if you have, you know, the 63 members right now. You know, I don't know what's going to happen this fall, but if they still come back at a strong number, mm-hmm, can they pass a tax hike through that Assembly caucus? That's the thing to watch and, like, get them to kind of go along with leadership.
Yeah, but Voss is saying, I may just ask my members to pass a revenue upper here.
I have no doubts they will push that issue. The question is, when push comes to shove, will they, A, get it through their House,
yep,
B, get through the Senate, and then C, when the governor likely vetoes it, can they override that veto? That's a lot of steps to kind of overcome.
I understand. Meanwhile, there was some good news this week reported by the Janesville Gazette. The feds are coming up with an additional $40 million to rebuild 3990 around Janesville, which will, I think, pretty much guarantee that they're going to make the deadline for rebuilding that. So there was a little bit of good news on transportation,
yes,
funding this
of
week.
Of course, if you would just learn that in the left lane is for passing, not for cruising, it'd take care of half of the problem, the congestion, right?
And how fast do you go on 94
no
to visit your mom?
No comment? Yeah.
Okay, second subject. The governor told WOKY in Madison he'll be speaking at the Republican National Convention, which is July 18 through 21 in Cleveland. You going to go?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm not either.
Going to watch. It's going to be interesting.
So we don't know yet whether he'll be speaking at a prime time, subprime time, middle of the night. You just don't know.
Well, the Donald had told us via Twitter on Wednesday the agenda would be out yesterday. No sign of it yet.
Oops.
I haven't seen it yet this morning. I've been looking on Twitter for
That's because he's looking for a slot for Ted Cruz, who just agreed yesterday to speak without endorsing the Donald.
Well, what's interesting is the number of Republicans who are backing away or saying, I'm not going, I'm not going to speak.
Yep.
Governor Walker is one of the few people who's got a high profile nationally saying, I'm going to speak. Ted Cruz now is in that line as well. But who else is going to be up there? Bob Knight, former basketball coach from alma mater. He's been talked about as a speaker. You know, I mean, some people surmise to me that the reason that the agenda's not out is because Donald Trump is having a hard time finding a way to fill all the slots.
Okay.
He's talking about his family speaking, for example, to fill time up. He said at one time, I've been asked to speak every night at the convention. You know, it's going to be an unusual lineup, not what we're used to seeing, if you will.
Okay, and the governor then tweeted basically what he had said a few weeks ago, but he put out a tweet after saying he's going to speak at the convention. Last August, I said I'd support the GOP nominee. It's now clear who the RNC delegates will vote to nominate, and he is better than she. Still not mentioning the name of Trump. But in your report, you said this is interesting for what the governor didn't say. Why?
Well, how do I put this? The governor is like, it's a weird thing where he's not really embracing Trump, if you will, but he's kind of like anti-Clinton, if that makes any sense. So I think that's kind of interesting. He's not, for the last few weeks, he's been saying to or make the argument of, delegates, you guys should be able to vote your conscience, right? That was his position for
that.
A couple of weeks.
He and Ryan said the same thing.
Now he's saying that's not reality. You know, let's get on board kind of thing. He's going to be the nominee. That's the reality of it. It's kind of a weird pivot, if you will, for Scott Walker from where he was just a couple of weeks ago.
What do you think is going to be the number one theme when he does get to talk to the nation and the world at the GOP convention?
Well,
the Wisconsin experience? Go ahead.
One, what slot does he get? Is he a primetime speaker who's going to be have the stage to himself? Two, is he going to be a tack dog on Clinton? Because, you know, if you're a tack dog on Clinton, that could make both the Trump people happy and the never Trump people happy because they don't like Hillary Clinton. So
yeah,
that could be a good path. Will he be the Chris Christie of 2016 where he takes his slot and makes it about him? That didn't work out so well for Chris Christie, if you remember back to the 2012 convention. Or does Governor Walker lay out some kind of vision of, this is the conservative leadership that we can rally behind no matter what, that lead this country forward? You could make a speech that's above the fray, if you will, the chaos of the Republican Party right now, and set yourself up for down the road, just in case things don't work out.
Because here's a guy who clearly is serious about seeking a third term. And again, he's a fairly young man, what, 47? Mm-hmm. He hasn't ruled out the stars aligning in his own mind to run for president again.
I would be shocked if Governor Walker doesn't at least take a look at running for president before it's all said and done.
Right. Assuming he seeks and wins a third term?
Even if he doesn't run for a third term,
I'd
look at running for president again.
He wouldn't have a base to run for president.
There are all kinds of arguments to be made that Governor Walker could walk away after a second term and go out and continue the fight, if you will, for conservative causes as a head of a think tank or building more of a base that way? I mean, there are all kinds of ways to do this. You don't have to be sitting governor to run. And he said himself, after dropping out this past race, that he learned the lesson that you can't run for president while you're sitting governor. There's too much going on. Now, the question is, back when he was running, you know, county executive ran for president, or governor, I'm sorry, well, will you fill out, before you run for governor, will you finish the term as county executive? Well, I'm not going to say. Right. In 2014, will you fill out this term as governor, asking basically about president? Well, I'm focused on this race. You know, right. He's finagled that before. Could he do it again? I don't know. That'd be tough.
So think tank like the Bradley Foundation, maybe the governor sorry that they just hired Rick Graber, former state GOP chairman.
All kinds of things you could throw out there of what could be a platform for Governor Walker to continue on in the national eye and then run for. Ben Carson wasn't a sitting governor, right?
Herman
Mitt
Cain,
Romney
Pizza
wasn't Maggie. a sitting governor, right?
Yeah.
So there are all kinds of ways to find a platform, not beyond being in public office.
Okay. All right. Enough of Scott Walker for now. But, boy, every week. Senator Ron Johnson chairs the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs. Speaker Paul Ryan, both from Wisconsin. So it's important how they reacted to FBI Director Comey's report saying Secretary Clinton and her aides extremely careless. Mm-hmm. Their emails from private servers may have been intercepted by hostiles. But no reasonable prosecutor would find the charges. So then Ron Johnson says, if the evidence asks in a letter to FBI Director Comey, if the evidence that the FBI collected about Secretary Clinton's use of a private email account and server did not constitute gross negligence, what set of facts would cause the FBI to recommend criminal charges under the gross negligence standard? So let's talk about Johnson first. He's reserving the right to bring Comey before his committee, because when he was asked after the Milwaukee Rotary which U.S. Senate committee would investigate it, he looked at reports and said, mine. This is my job. So how do you see him playing this Comey thing?
Good question. Jason Chaffetz,
Utah Republican, already had
Comey for his committee in the House.
He grilled him for 3 or 4 hours yesterday.
You know, Republicans are say they're unhappy is an understatement about what happened this week. I mean, they were watching that news conference and thinking, okay, they're going to be charged. This is going to be it. We're finally going to get Hillary Clinton, like, in court, if you will. So when that didn't happen, there was this kind of wave of outrage, if you will. Now they're figuring out, okay, what do we do next? And there's always in politics the point where you overreach and go too far. That's the line they've got to figure out where to toe. But it is clear that Ron Johnson is going to want to get more answers. He has got a very valuable pulpit, if you will, to seek those answers, which will make the base very happy, which is not a bad thing for you in an election year. Paul Ryan is using this as an issue also beyond that stuff to rally people against Hillary Clinton, to kind of undermine her candidacy for president. I mean, there are all kinds of political benefits to getting the answers or seeking the answers these guys want about these issues.
Okay, and let's talk about Paul Ryan's response. He said a lot of things, but among them, there are a lot of unanswered questions here. Comey shredded the case that Clinton had been making all year long. Ryan was really aggressive on this. Are you surprised at the tone he set and how hard he pushed back on the FBI director?
No, because, again, these guys just can't figure out how could you come to that conclusion. I mean, if you read their, listen to their news conferences, read their statements, they don't comprehend how you can be so reckless and not get charged with what they consider to be top secret information. How did that happen? How does the average citizen do something like that and not get charged? That's kind of the refrain you're hearing over and over again.
Yeah, so. But I also thought, Ryan, I thought it was a pretty good pushback to say, look, if the FBI director says that Hillary Clinton and her aides treat this stuff in extremely careless ways, let's stop giving her security briefings. I thought that was a pretty effective response. Agree?
Yes, it's not going to go anywhere, but it's an interesting line to use in the campaign trail and in the public realm.
It is. Okay, and then I went back to the Marquette University Law School poll in June, and Mr. Franklin asked, does the fact that Hillary Clinton's use of private server emails, does it bother you? 61% of those who responded said yes. So, live issue?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even though she wasn't charged, it's still a problem for her. And when you look at, like, the negatives that Donald Trump has, sometimes you have to look at polls and go, how is this guy even there? Then you go, oh, wait, it's because Hillary Clinton has baggage A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K. Going back the last 30 years that people go, okay, it's because they're so disliked. I mean, this is just another block, if you will, to make the case that Hillary Clinton is not a well-liked person by the general public and not trusted by them. I mean, it's a problem for her.
Okay, let's stay on Ron Johnson. I had the privilege of interviewing Senator Johnson for maybe 20 minutes at the Milwaukee Rotary this week. I was the one who asked him, are you going to take a position on the Trans-Pacific Partnership by the November 8 election? And I was surprised that he said no. Now, let's set the context. Trying to get ready for this show, I read some summaries of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. They say that up to 40% of American imports and exports could be governed by the Trans-Pacific mm-hmm. Partnership if ratified by Congress, point one. Point two, Senator Johnson said in a clip we're about to hear, look, I am the only U.S. senator who has run a manufacturing business and created jobs, so I know about these trade issues and their impact on potential businesses. But then he said, I don't expect that the Congress is going to vote on the TPP before the election, so in effect, I don't have to take a vote.
Mm-hmm.
So how many ways is he trying to have it, JR?
Well, a couple. What's interesting about this is if you've got to look at where the voting public is right now. Trade is a hot issue. Why is Donald Trump doing so well? And one, because he's hitting on trade. There is this sense among voters that you can see in polling that things just aren't working for them. Like, these trade deals are not making their lives better. You know, they're not seeing a benefit at home. Their wages aren't going up. They're angry about stuff, and trade is one of them. So you have that issue. So why would you take a position where, for Republicans, free trade is a big plank of their base, or their platform, if you will. The base, though, now has this populist street going through it that's going, we're not happy about trade. So you have this divide between intellectual elite, the think tank Republicans, and the activists and base going, you know what? We want a wall. We want to stop this stuff. We are tired of losing to other countries when it comes to trade. Trump has a open audience on this issue and has played it fairly well because people are tired of this stuff. So what do you do if you're a Republican when in your heart, in your mind, you are on board with free trade, but you look at the political ramifications and go, this is not a winner for me right now?
And on that note, let's listen actually to what Senator Johnson told the Milwaukee Rotary and then news reporters who asked him about it afterwards about his position that, no, I'm not going to give a position by the November 8 election. So let's listen to it.
Not many people in Washington actually have my private sector business experience, but you know, I've got a little modesty in terms of how much I know. Every business has its own complexities. The trade deal is very complex as it relates to every business, so we're going through the very thoughtful process of meeting with constituents, anybody who's got a dog in this fight, you know, anybody who's be affected by this, and we're just going through the process of having them review the complexities of the deal versus the complexities of their business and whether they support it or not.
Do you plan to announce your position before the November 8th election, sir?
No, because I'll keep meeting with constituent groups and evaluate this until I have to take a vote, which is not unusual, by the way.
Now, I'm assuming we're not going to vote until after the election. I believe this has to start in the House. I'm not hearing anything in Congress we're going to have anywhere near the time legislatively to take this up before the election. So, again, this is not unusual for me to continue to consider any type of piece of legislation until you actually have to vote on it. And this is incredibly complex. I mean, I have no idea how my opponent could snap, you know, come to a knee-jerk snap reaction to this thing, having read a couple summary pages on WikiLeaks.
JR, Johnson said that Russ Feingold, there's a clear distinction here.
Mm-hmm.
Feingold came out against TPP, but the Senator Johnson says Feingold is uninformed because he hasn't done the line-by-line, doesn't have the business experience, isn't meeting with some of these Wisconsin companies to assess what might happen to them. But you still have a pretty big difference on the issue when you have a U.S. Senator saying, voters, I'm not going to tell you how I'm going to vote.
I watched your interview with him online, by the way. One thing that was interesting was when he's talking about TPP, he said almost everybody he's met with, save for one group, has been pro-TPP, except for unions, you know, which he kind of like waved off. Everybody else he's met with, the people who come and talk to him, they're strongly for it.
Yes.
So what's the next step? And again, there's also but no incentive for him to take a position on an issue that could be problematic for him with the intellectual base of the party, the populist base of the party, and voters in the middle who aren't happy about trade.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't the support for the TPP the biggest difference between Trump and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which supports it?
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Because they've been sniping at Trump over this issue, and Trump's been thin-skinned about it.
Feingold has been trying to hammer Johnson on this, take a position, do your job, you know, this kind of theme, and make him sound like somebody who's trying to be a politician, if you will. If you see Feingold's ads they're trying to make the case that this guy's not the non-politician you think he is. So we'll see if he weaves us into that argument.
No, it's just intriguing. Voters who will be asked to elect the next U.S. senator won't have the incumbent giving his position on the major trade issue now before the nation, before the November 8 election. Okay, let's go to your WisPolitics stock pick back after 2 weeks gone.
So, Thomas Nelson.
Rising.
So, a few months back, we talked about
Out of Gamey County exec.
Running for the 8th Congressional. A few months back, we talked about Mike Gallagher, Republican who moved back to the district work for Governor Walker's presidential campaign. That didn't pan out, so now he's running for Congress. He raised $520,000. At the time, Gallagher's campaign told us that was the best initial fundraising quarter for any first-time House candidate they've ever found in Wisconsin history. Thomas Nelson got in April and topped it, raised $530,000 or $40,000. Now, I'm sure, knowing Thomas Nelson's work ethic, that he had like a barometer in his office or was making his fundraising calls where he said, okay, that's my number, and I'm not going to stop till I top it. So he went out there and topped it. So, you know, good number, good initial report. Other thing to note is that the DCCC and a House Majority PAC are due a reserve TV time for Nelson this fall. I mean, this is a sign of that this race is a priority for Democrats. They see an opportunity there. Now, let's not forget, Mike Gallagher's on the air by himself right now.
Yeah.
He's building up a positive brand for being somebody who's not as deeply rooted in the district, if you will. As
he
like
has
a,
to introduce himself to 8th District voters.
And he's got that all to himself right now.
Yeah. There's this picture of him in Marine with a helicopter.
Absolutely.
And his campaign website said he's not been endorsed by the Department of Defense. But go ahead.
Yes. But this is a sign that Nelson is for real as a fundraiser, which we're not shocked by. National Dems are making a part of this race, and there's an opportunity there for the win. Now, some of the factors are, how's Donald Trump do in Wisconsin come fall? Even in presidential years, that district in northeast Wisconsin has a slight GOP lean to it. So if Trump can get there to like a close race, it might be even... might be a tough race for Nelson no matter what.
And a footnote, Nelson does not have a primary opponent, correct?
No.
So he's printing money for the November 8 election, where in the Gallagher, Lissay, and McNulty.
Yep.
There's a three-way.
Very underfunded. Third one, McNulty, very underfunded candidate, has not really put money together or raised a profile. We're really watching Gallagher and Lissay, but it's a good period for Thomas Nelson. We'll see how, one, Gallagher's number comes out, what he raised in this quarter, and two, can Nelson then kind of come back and have another good quarter? Or was this low-hanging fruit they just pulled it easily?
Nelson, cash on hand, July 1?
We haven't seen the complete report. So this is what his campaign told us. So that's
right.
One caveat.
Yep.
So also haven't seen, is it PAC money? Is it out-of-state money? What is it? But he was like, what, 470-ish, his campaign said.
Okay. So we now have a new record for quarterly fundraising by a congressional candidate?
For the first quarter for a first-time candidate, yes.
Yeah, it'll stand for all of about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Okay, mixed.
So we talked to us a little bit with Scott Walker, but I want to talk about the politics of it. So for the 2 weeks Scott Walker made the argument of, okay, delegates, you vote your conscience, it made sense to insiders. You know, okay, Governor Walker is never a big Trump fan. He's kind of creating some space. We're saying, you know, sending a message to people of, okay, you guys who aren't Trump fans, I'm with you. You know, we've got some concerns. If this Trump thing doesn't work out this November, I'll be there when it's time to put the party back together, you know, November 9th, and look ahead toward 2020. There was an obvious benefit to that. The benefit of this is not so clear. Now all of a sudden, doing a 180, saying, I'm going to speak at convention, Trump is a reality, delegates should get on board. It doesn't make as much sense unless you view it through the prism of Governor Walker wants to be part of the national conversation and keep his profile elevated. Now, that helps make a little bit of sense.
Yes.
Now, will this kind of think tank Republican, intellectual elite Republican, will he hold it against, and she hold it against Scott Walker for moving back and forth? It's unusual. See Charlie Sykes, for example, being critical of Scott Walker. He was not happy about this move, if you will. There's that question for him. What speech does he give?
Right.
What platform does he have? I mean, there's some upside, though, for him here. He is going to be a speaker of the National Convention, one of the few electeds speaking of the National Convention. He could have a high-profile spot that could, Barack Obama, 2004.
Oh, I understand.
Propel him to bigger and better things. So there's some upside to it, but there's some kind of eyebrow raised, like what's the end game for Scott Walker?
Okay, but I want to come back to something you said. In his speech, he's got a balance. Hillary is bad. The nation goes to hell under Hillary.
Yeah.
This is a Wisconsin experience. This is what I've done. And then he's got to leaven in some praise for Trump, or he wouldn't be standing there in front of the world.
Yeah.
So this balancing high wire act he's got to do.
Yeah. Now, Chris Christie, he may have gone off script in 2012 and talked more about himself than Mitt Romney. So I don't know how well they vet these speeches and how, you know, Scott Walker could go off script, if you will. But, yeah, there's going to be a balancing act for him. It could be a high wire.
Okay. Falling?
So Donald Trump, remember, it's a two-week look. Let's get out of the way first off that Donald Trump hiring Pete Minchin, who is Duffy's chief of staff, good move. I mean, Republicans I've talked to have praised it. He's a smart guy. He's going to be
Be Trump's person running the Wisconsin campaign.
Yes, and he's got Vince Travado, who's also been an advocate for him, working on delegates right now. So good hire with Pete Minchin. But pull back and look at what we found out at the end of last week. Mike Grebe says, I'm not going to be part of anything that results in the nomination of Donald Trump for president. Scott McCallum says, I'm not going to go to convention anymore because they should have somebody more enthusiastic on the floor of the convention cheering for this guy when he's speaking. Jim Steinke, already known that he was going to drop out because of the Donald Trump thing. You know, Rebecca Clayfish, it was a scheduling conflict. Mark Green told me it was a logistical thing. But you're seeing
and
the
not
residual.
To mention Congressman Reed Ribble again saying what he's been saying, Trump is not qualified to be president. Excuse me.
You're seeing the residual of the April primary where the anti-Trump effort was so strong here, and these guys have not embraced Donald Trump. He still has a problem with, especially southeastern Wisconsin, that intellectual kind of conservative elite. I describe them that way as the people who are like the thinkers, the people who had subscribed to the national publications. They listen to talk radio and have these like high-minded conversations about, you know, they're people who really put a lot of like principle into what the party stands for. They're just not there. And this is another view of that. And then again, you know, this should be a week when Donald Trump should be having a field day with Hillary Clinton nationally, but he stomps all over that message with the tweets with the image of Clinton and the Star of David, which he says was, then he tweets a Disney book with a similar symbol saying what's
Frozen.
He just finds a way to stamp all over his message.
I thought when you said you're going to have him falling, it was because of his less than cordial, this very tough back and forth with U.S. senators yesterday.
Oh.
He looked at Senator Jeff Flake and said, I'm going to cause you to lose. And Flake looks at him and said, excuse me, I'm not up this year. So that's why I thought.
Well, we keep this based off Wisconsin stuff. So
I understand.
I can't, if I try to handicap the national mood, that would take all my, but Wisconsin, the Wisconsin angle is that delegate thing. That really shows you that he's not quite there yet with the folks back here. And, you know, if you are looking at a normal presidential year and you're Republican, you need the base in Southeast Wisconsin solidified behind you. You need that base there, every Republican you can turn out, and find a couple more points just to get to 50%, because we have been trending blue. Now, here's one caveat. Hillary Clinton is not getting more popular anytime soon in Wisconsin. So will we see 3 million people turn out like with Barack Obama in 8 and 12? Will we see the numbers that he hit with her, or will she start to fade where the turnout drops to 2.8, 2 points, you know, where you start seeing less of a Dem enthusiasm? If that happens, you can see the race tightening, where maybe there's still an avenue. I'm not saying Trump is going to lose for sure. There is an avenue. It's not a very wide one, but there's an avenue for him still.
Do we know how Senator Johnson characterized his interactions with Donald Trump with all the other Republican senators yesterday?
I saw something briefly that was fairly positive but not very like in-depth about it, but he wasn't one of the ones who was singled out in these national reports about the combative. Donald Trump called Mark Kirk a loser or characterized him as such, that, you know, that kind of thing. The Jeff Flake thing.
When I asked Senator Johnson at the Milwaukee Rotary, should those who are planning to dump Donald Trump at the convention, should they drop that effort? He said, I'm not going there, I don't know, which is.
And do you trust his judgment? Well, presidents need good advisors. And he said that twice. I mean, it's a dance Republicans have to do. And this is another part of what played into this, is that Trump is continuing to put Wisconsin Republicans on the defensive to have to explain. Paul Ryan is constantly asked about this. One of Scott Walker's aides told me that, you know, he's out doing these stops out state. You get 20 questions, 19 and a half are about Trump. You know, Ron Johnson being asked about his, and Johnson is trying to walk this path of, I support the good, the like stuff I like, but I'm not endorsing. It's,
and meanwhile, I've got my own race, and my head is in this game. And meanwhile, the Arizona State Republican chairman is already circling around Reince Priebus to take him out. Anyway, it's very interesting. Okay, we got about 20 seconds. You also reported Feingold had a good fundraising quarter, $4.1 million.
He raises more every three-month period. I'm assuming he's going to have more money than Johnson again, and that's why he's up on the air on the ads that he can do.
So April, May, June, Feingold raised 4.1. Do we know how much Senator Johnson raised?
Not yet. Hasn't
released
that number.
Maybe we'll have that for the next Rewind. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for July 8th.